Hey there, and welcome to SaaS Unbound podcast. I'm Daniel Tulfaut. I'm your host today, and I'm joining for a special series where I chat with product experts about all things SaaS. I'm the head of product at SaaS Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful small SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And my guest today is Michał Suski, head of innovation and co-founder at Surfer. Hello, Michał. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I really appreciate my presence in here. Thank you.
So glad to have you with me and to talk about, you know, all things product and innovation with you. Seems to be the perfect person to talk to about that.
It's been quite a journey. I've seen growing a product for like 8 years now, starting in a basement as an internal tool, and then going through all of the quite a lot of the stages of organization growing and so on. So I feel like I will have some good stuff to say about it, how to find your way.
Perfect. Looking forward to that. Perhaps let's kind of start at the beginning. Tell me a bit about your background. What brought you into the space of innovation and product?
In fact, I graduated as a Master of Science at Forestry, which has even nothing to do with the IT or whatsoever. Somehow I joined the IT thing as a quality assurance in a software house. So I saw how products are built from the side of development. Then I joined the SEO agency as a writer, basically. So I've been learning SEO for a year, and it turned out to be really rewarding, because you saw your progress really easy, making client rank higher, understanding why. It was like, okay, that fueled my learning. So I could spend more and more time to learn SEO. And we had a situation in the agency. It was a really small agency founded on a really small village. So literally 300 people in the village living. So when all the cars came into the office, it was like double the population. And we couldn't find people to hire. So we decided to scale up instead of scaling up the manpower. We decided to scale up our processes, and on-page SEO became a real thing. That was like 8 years ago. It started to move the needle more and more in SEO. And we've been analyzing content of the competitors' pages by hand, looking at these pages, you know, checking headings, paragraphs, keywords, and so on. And it turned out we could build a tool for ourselves to let the tool extract the information, and we make the decisions based on that. And that was the very first time I got involved for real in shaping a product for myself. So I was a client, and I was the creator. So I scratched my own itch, basically. When we realized that, oh snap, it works, it helps us, can we quit client SEO? Maybe yes. So we decided to go full throttle on the product. And instead of scaling up the agency further, we decided to build a product and leave the agency as soon as we leave it in a stable condition. So that's how I got involved in building products.
All right. That's quite a wild ride. And interestingly, the second person I know with a master in forestry that went into IT.
Whoa, nice.
So there seems to be a small pattern there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a scary time as well, right? When you turn a working business with kind of a service model into a product company, there's, you know, some risk involved there as well.
That's a big thing.
How did that work out? How did you approach it back then?
At first, we've been working in two organizations at the same time. So still figuring out the agency work. I was head of SEO at the agency, so quite crucial position. On the other hand, we wanted to develop the product as fast as we can and as accurate as we can. And actually, having these two roles at the same time helped us a lot to evaluate the quality of the product. So the agency was using the product. The constant feedback was flowing. Okay, this worked, that didn't work. Maybe you could do this way or that way. And we were able to shorten the feedback loop to the very minimum, thanks to still having the agency and at the same time developing the product. But, well, the problems that showed up after transitioning from the agency work to the SaaS, to the product work, they were totally different. And we, as the founders, that was our very first SaaS product, basically. So we learned everything the hard way, basically. So it wasn't easy transition, but it turned out that it was really rewarding because, well, the SaaS outgrown the agency by a lot.
Interesting here is that that means if the product is outgrowing your agency, then you really quickly started to have other agencies probably as customers as well. So they were kind of competing with your original model.
Oh,
was there ever like a phase where you thought like, are we actually kind of feeding our competitors instead of strengthening ourselves?
Oh, the cake was so big. And the agency was operating on the Polish market, while we, with the product, decided to go full global. So even though we had connections in Poland and so on, we didn't even decide to have the Polish version, language version, or the Polish currency, or supporting the Polish payments. We just went completely global with only English version, only English website, only English product, and payments only in US dollars using a card. So we didn't compete too much on the Polish market. And SEO is big game enough that even though you got these on-page SEO really well, there's a lot of other factors. So it's obviously not a silver bullet to have the product and okay, SEO is done forever. No, it's not like that. So it wasn't that risky because there is a lot of other things that matter in SEO. But we didn't even hesitate to go for it. But yes, you are right. And actually, this is a good point so people can realize building SaaSes. Don't hesitate. Don't hesitate. Like, go for it. SaaS can be so much bigger than the agency. Because you scale up to infinite levels compared to the agency that sells time, basically.
Well, that's the first great hack that you mentioned early on in the podcast, so don't hesitate to build your SaaS. So, but let's dive a bit deeper into Surfer. So what does it actually do? So what is the actual product?
Mm-hmm. So at this point is SEO content optimization platform, which is a place that tells you what to write about to drive organic traffic, how to write it so Google understands it and ranks you high, and how to maintain it optimized because circumstances change, updates from Google kick in very often right now. So you need to have your content up to date. So this is what we do at Surfer, help you ideate, help you execute the content creation, and then help you maintain it optimized, so Google likes it all the time. But at the very beginning, at our core, it was data-driven optimization insights. So we've been analyzing these HTML of top-ranking pages, looking at what is familiar among them, and you can compare yourself to them and see, okay, they have more headings. They have these and those keywords in the headings, or they have that many other surrounding keywords, relevant keywords, and we listed those keywords. So people were like health checking their content, like how I am different from the top 10 and why I am not within the top 10. And then they were applying changes and, you know, getting closer to the top 10. Right now, it's more about the workflow. It's actually super helpful for all of the SaaS founders, actually, because traffic from Google is, let's say, free. It's just a bit of your work, and it helps a lot. I've seen a lot of successes in SaaS businesses getting a lot of traffic from Google. Right now, it's about the workflow, like how to gain the topical authority. So Google says that you are an expert in payment processing, or you are an expert in like getting things done, like a to-do app, or you are an expert in hosting webinars, whatever. So we will tell you like what kind of content pieces you need to have to become authority in your niche. Then we help you write them as giving you guidelines, like how long, how structured, what keywords, what questions to answer, and so on. And then we will monitor it and tell you like, okay, something happened, like there's new iPhone 16 and your review is about a 15. So consider, you know, moving forward with your content because the time has changed. So this is what we do right now.
All right. So I'm not super familiar with the SEO space. I right now picture it a bit like this SEO assistant that kind of sits by your side and you kind of every day just tells you, hey, today would be a good day to write about that topic and see this happened in your ranking in the past weeks. Perhaps good day today to, you know, tackle that issue.
And especially in SaaS business, when you solve some specific problems, you can write an article on every of those problems that you solve. And this is actually one of the best utilizations of SEO in SaaS business. Like you solve a problem of transferring money to Nigeria somehow. So you can write an article like how to transfer money from this place to that place. That is really niche one, but you got the perfect solution for that. That's the easy way. It's the cheap way. It's like all of the advantages that your product has, right? You can say like it's the best way to do it because whatever you solve someone else's problem through content, and then they think like, oh, they helped me to solve my problem and they also have the solution, so maybe I will try that solution. So it's really good for the funnel because they are educated and already thankful for providing some knowledge. So that's actually the way to utilize SEO for SaaS products. But it will be hard in marketing niches. It will be hard in SEO niches. Like we are, it's been like 6-7 years of building the website to get traffic from Google because we compete with HubSpot, with Ahrefs, SEMrush. So they have monstrous websites. It's really hard to beat them. But in smaller SaaS niches, it can be really easy.
All right. Sounds awesome. So you're not only the co-founder of Surfer, but you're also, your official title is you're the head of innovation. So what does that actually mean? How can I picture your kind of job description, and what does your calendar look like?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
One of the toughest questions, because I try to do what moves the needle the most at this point today with the resources I have. If you ask me, what I do daily is I try to find opportunities. And sometimes it is opportunity to join the podcast. Sometimes it is an opportunity to work with data scientists because a new model was rolled that can help us achieve whatever goal. So we'll jump on it. Or maybe I will go and chat to the client or teach them SEO to map out their problems, their missing elements of on understanding how the product works. So then I can help other people in the team to actually close these gaps, to bridge these gaps. So I don't even know whether I am head of innovation or maybe jack of all trades or something else. It's been always a struggle to find that title. So the calendar. I talk to critical people in a company that can drive innovation. So data scientists, someone from sales, so I can help them innovate in sales process. Someone from the marketing, I can help them sell or present our product so they resonate with SEOs, because, well, I was one of the first clients of the product itself. So, yeah, it's definitely jack of all trades. And, yeah, not sure if it's the best answer, but sometimes it's just like that. I don't know what to do today. And I look around and I find something and I do it. And quite often it turns out into something really cool, like a new partnership or integration or something.
Yeah, that of course, that's like super vague, but it completely resonates with me. I think it's very similar in the typical role of a product manager. It's often depicted as kind of this mythical animal of being like one part UX designer, one part business manager, one part technical person, etc. Kind of the glue between all of that to make it happen and push for it.
If I was better organized, I would probably be more into product, like head of product or CPO or something. Actually, I used to be a CTO for a while, but it didn't work because I couldn't handle like organizing things and thinking like, oh, 6 months ahead, there's some KPI. No, not that. No. More like opportunistically. That's why we thought maybe it's more like an innovation. So I can spark something here, spark something there, and then hand it over to the product. So, okay, how I did it with the duct tape, right? This is how it's supposed to work. Now you can create a proper API, proper implementation. So it works like that, but it's stable, let's say. That's kind of the best thing I do, I think.
All right. Well, I guess in essence, innovation also just means creating new tangible value in a way that hasn't been done before in that particular way. So that is a very broad thing. But looking into your marketing material, it is that you also said, or you claim that you kind of released more than 80 features and more than 2,000 improvements into Surfer in 24. So there is not, you know, only jumping from one podcast and one opportunity to the next. There's like real value created there. Like what kind of things have been added there? It sounds like a huge amount of improvements to a software over a year.
So I will tell you how we work so you can understand how it happened that we could implement so many things. So first of all, Surfer is definitely a product-led growth company. Obviously, we do a lot of marketing, we do some sales, but in general, the whole marketing is based on the majority of the marketing is based on the product that is being improved. So the product is the fuel for the marketing. Besides the support team, I think the biggest team is biggest group is software developers, basically at Surfer. And we work in a teams. So there's one part of the application that is managed by one team, the other part of the application that is managed by the other team. They're like product owners of these areas that have some goals to let's say, improve stickiness, to reduce churn, to improve the value, to reduce the cost of the application, so on and so forth. We always been fascinated with the shape up process. A lot of, like, I've read Rework a couple times, and I'm really a fan of working this way. So we try to deliver as soon as we can smaller chunks. So it's not like, half a year sprint to deliver one big part of the application, but more like, let's have the MVP done. Let's have the MVP V2. Let's try to always check, okay, what's the baseline? Does it make sense to ship this thing now, or let's ship these together in 2 weeks from now? If we check the baseline and we see, okay, the thing we did so far is already bringing a little bit more value, then we ship it. So this is how we can ship so many things. And this is basically the reason that we can grow in so many directions, because it's not only like writing content or providing guidelines. It's also ideation. It's also the maintenance, monitoring, and many other aspects. And up to this point, it's been 7-8 years. We created many separate tools, many, let's say, dots to be connected. So these dots are, there's a lot of dots. And now we are putting a lot of effort in connecting these dots into workflows. So if you have a lot of things done and the only thing is to connect some of those, it comes easier. So that's another reason why we could ship so many things. It's because basically we have a lot of work done that wasn't shipped, that wasn't connected, and we are kind of like picking these fruits at this point.
All right, super interesting. That sparks like 1,000 questions from me.
I know. We could sit here for like a whole day, right?
Probably. Perhaps a bit about the overall process. I think there are like two main approaches to this. You can kind of validate features before they get to developers and try to build, prototypes and do fake door tests and things like that. And when you're absolutely sure this will create value, you give it to the developers, or you kind of iterate and code kind of you're pushing a lot of things because you have a great velocity and then just see what works, what doesn't work, and sunset a lot of things as well that didn't work. What's like the philosophy for Surfer?
God. Pandora box opened. So at the beginning, it was 100% feeling-based development. So like, okay, it could be great to have it. So let's build it. And we've been building it. Of course, we trashed sometimes, but in general, we developed good stuff because of our intuition, which is a huge part of innovating at the product. And you should never underestimate your intuition if you are in a business for some time. But then we try to professionalize, let's say, to kind of, have the scope, have the plan, details, refinements and stuff, measure things. I can sound like I'm not a fan, because I'm not, but you cannot measure everything. So sometimes you do something for sake of measuring the impact, and then you lose the primary goal, because you lost the speed, or it's not relevant anymore, especially these days with large language models growing so fast that if you want to test something for 3 months, you can already trash it because it will be outdated. So pushing products that are not 100% polished is actually a must now to be competitive. So what's the philosophy? It used to be full intuition at the beginning, then it leaned towards analysis, quality, quantity, not my thing, we got people that do this, right? So it's like they do it. So we lean towards that way of operations. But now I feel like we are finding the balance between being opportunistic and lean on new things that can, you know, revert the whole table. Like, you got a quarterly plan? Nice. Great. You have it. But something happened and, well, we have to do it. So we are trying to find a balance between doing these opportunistic events versus sticking to the plan and crawling through the tasks and goals. And no matter what happens, we will have this direction. So right now the philosophy is like finding the balance between how much we can play and innovate and trash versus stick to the plan and carry on. So
yeah, super great advice. And I fully agree with that. I do believe there's a ton of value in like investing into learning, into understanding the market space, the user behavior, and figuring out like what would actually move the needle. But it usually goes south when you start to think about plans and adding an effort tag to any kind of roadmap item. That usually leads to tackling the low-hanging fruits, which don't really create value. And at times I would just say, well, just grab the freaking stuff that appears to be super great and don't look at the cost. Just, you know, get cracking, get it done. And that's where the magic happens. Instead of adding a button here and adding a new column there and a new tooltip here.
I could work with you. So yeah, in general, that's the philosophy actually, to improve for existing customer base, but don't forget to stay ahead of the game. Otherwise, you will always deliver the fastest horse. Like, it's about to making a car, not the faster horse, not the faster. You can't stay on top of the market always with the fastest horse. Sometimes there will be a tornado event type of thing. And if you are onto something while the revolution starts, let's say AI thing, you can float on the surface. If you stick to the plan, you will never jump on the opportunity. So tough decisions.
Well said. What I'm super curious about, does this, you know, just try out stuff, break things, ship fast, learn from it, does this translate to innovating on your pricing model as well? Because this is what I find that a lot of companies are very, very hesitant to do, and they might like change the price points from, like, say, $30 to $35 every 2 years. But like tackling, should we actually be, I don't know, seat based? Should we be volume based? Should we have a different tier structure? This is where small and fast innovation often kind of struggles with. Is this a topic for you?
I already got a headache after this question. In terms of the pricing, I am personally extremely sensitive. And if you ask me what would be the best price, I would say $0. Let's give it away because it's a good stuff. So I'm not the best person to give advice on the pricing because, well, if something works, if someone buys it, I'm always hesitant to making changes, to not piss off anybody and so on. But it should be a part of the innovation, and it is for us as well, but I'm not involved because I'm just bad at this. But in general, only changing the pricing can sometimes lead to extreme success in terms of the revenue growth, or to extreme failure as well, or to even fueling growth of your competition because market can backfire. And we've been in many situations. Sometimes it worked really well. Like, we had a goal with pricing one of the products to not be the market penetration, but to be the premium, to be the expensive, to find the most expensive price point people can pay. And we found it, and that was a great experiment to see it working. But on the other hand, sometimes we try to make changes in the subscription models. We tried to sell a donut with a coffee. That donut was only liked by some people. So this way we received some more churn, lower conversions, and our competition were like, oh, thank you for doing the price change because we got a new influx of customers that were the most price sensitive. So it's a poker. It's a poker. If you know the mathematics, you will win. On average, you will be the winner if you know the mathematics. But if you are not good at that, it can be just a gamble. So yeah, don't ask me about the pricing.
Yeah, definitely some risk involved. So that also means that when you think about innovating in your product space, it's driven by customer value and not by changing specific like metrics for your business, like tackling a conversion rate or specific retention rates. Does this kind of follow automatically because you deliver great value, or is it a balancing act?
So there's a balance because we got these mixed panel things. We got some churn predictors that we know that, okay, if something happens, they are likely to churn, or they are likely to stay, or they are likely to upgrade. So naturally, these triggers become metrics to improve. So sometimes we innovate to satisfy the metrics that we know that these metrics move the needle. But sometimes, and that's actually my part, not the mixed panel thing, but the other, is that, okay, there is an update in Google and they introduce AI overviews. So what can we do about it? Or there is a new large language model that is now capable of doing this and this, and that was a blocker for a project 2 years ago. So we can jump on it right now. And it will ultimately deliver value to the customer. Even like, it's quite often a value that they do not know existed, right? It's like, oh, I've never thought about I could do it this way. So that's why customer interviews will never bring you a breakthrough thing. I mean, never. Okay, it's really rare that you will hear something that will make your company to pivot, for example, mm-hmm. or that will make your company shift focus into some other place. It's not coming through the interviews. It's not coming through, like, let's say, 7 people mentioned that we need something in the API, so we do it. It's more like a low-hanging fruit or to satisfy some existing customers, reduce churn, so on. Fine, absolutely. Balance, do it. But on the other hand, have at least some resources to play freely. Like, it's winter here in Poland right now. I got the untouched snow on the other side of the window. And basically, go and play. Do whatever. You want to do an angel? Do an angel. You want to throw the snowball? Throw the snowball. You will see what brings you more happiness. And then we will decide whether we are throwing snowballs or making angels in that snow. So there has to be a balance between these two.
Yeah, I really, really love that. That resonates tremendously with me. I do believe the customers are, it's not their job to give you solutions, but to tell you about their struggles. And then it's for you to come up with solutions. But even more so, it's for you to understand what's the actual job behind all of this, the job to be done. What's the what are we actually doing here, and how can we just make it better? Mm-hmm. So I often like to do this exercise where I take an existing company or the company that I'm currently working at, and just grab a a blank piece of paper and try to imagine, knowing what I know now about the market, if I now would build the perfect product, free from technical debt and what we could actually do right now, what would that look like? And just having these kind of bursts of vision, the sparks of ideas about the future, will inform you about where's the delta, what's the gap between where you are right now and where you actually want to be for the market. And whatever you build then will nothing look like that idea that you flashed out on the blank page of paper. But you would never get to that level of innovation if you stick to the one that you already have.
Yeah, we did it a couple of times. I can recall that. If there was no bond, like no limit, just think whatever you can do. And that was really moving the needle. So I'm glad you do these exercises. They are very useful.
Is there a bit of an organized way inside Surfer to push for this? Quite famous Google got for it with this, I don't know, one day a week, you know, Friday, everyone can join a project of their interest and just innovate. Do you give free space to explore to everyone, or is this driven by some kind of innovation lab inside of Surfer?
I would say that everyone is free to do stuff their way. Obviously, there's always the goal, so they cannot build something that is totally out of this world. But in general, everyone that works with me, it works like that. So I'm not trying to push them like, here's my scope for the product. It's like, tell me what's possible from your perspective as a techie, because I've got this problem and I don't want to ask you for doing this column next to that column in red. I'm asking you that I need this information. And if the column thing is something that is hard for you to achieve, you tell me what's achievable. And this way we can avoid rabbit holes. Because when something is in the scope, developers think this way, okay, I've got the scope, I need to think how to make the scope work. And they are not aware that they can cross stuff off the scope and do it their way. And sometimes, and quite often, their thinking is so much better than mine. And it opens so many doors in like I planned the scope because I thought there is a limitation. And they are thinking like, why did he plan the scope this way? But okay, probably it has to be like that. And we stay silent and end in the rabbit hole. But if the scope is really flexible and the scope is does not look like a must have, you know, or nice to have or something, but it's a general conversation between us, and we are explaining the, like with the client, basically, trying to find the outcome of the tool, they say like, hey, bro, if we didn't do the table, we could do this, this, and that, and I can do it in 30 minutes because we have a component done. And I'm, oh, God, so glad that we spoke about it. Otherwise, we will be in a rabbit hole for 3 weeks. So that's how I try to work with people. And obviously, there must be some organized way to build things that are quite obvious that we need to, let's say, organization settings or 2FA or billing some or like the technical debt fixes or maintenance or DevOps or stuff. It needs to be organized. But when it comes to that creative work and trying to go out of what we know, you cannot do it in an organized way. A bit too long monologue, but...
No, super, super great insight. And that actually sparks an interesting question for me. In my experience, there are like a lot of developers that would rather ask for, give me a list of acceptance criteria, like spell it out for me and don't make me like, don't drag me into this creative process. So it's probably a bit of a learning process. But the bigger question here is, does this way of working affect your hiring? Like when you look for new team members, how does this translate into like your requirements for a person that probably yes. isn't covered by hard skills?
Yes.
Could you tell a bit about your selection process?
So the key thing when we hire is to check people's agency, if they are like self-responsible, if they require management to work or can actually work on their own. And obviously, there are skilled, talented people that you will still hire because they are really, they will deliver, but they can work in the areas that are really well organized with these acceptance criteria. Don't get me in the process. So they are really needed at the company as well. And they will work with product owners, with product managers, where they have a scope, they have a plan, they have like 3 months plan and so on. They will work there. But when I kind of do a recruiting for people I will work with, I will look for the other people. I will look for people who could be like a bit crazy, a bit disorganized, a bit chaotic. But on the other hand, we will basically have a good vibe and it will click. So we can get to the better outcomes that are needed in this short-term iteration process that I prefer. So again, balance. Hiring also requires a balance. In general, Surfer prefers independent people. But if there's someone that is extremely skilled but need management, they can also work with us. But in general, we prefer to have independent people.
All right. That sounds good to me. So we're almost an hour into the interview. And as you said, we kind of opened the box of Pandora and could be talking about all the different edge cases and the different approaches to product development. But I think we're going to postpone that for another session, and let's wrap this up with your most liked hack, or the one tip or trick that you have for innovating in the SaaS space, adding features, working with customers. You know, whatever you want to focus on, but what is your secret hack?
Yeah, I would prize the intuition. For real, because when you start SaaS, you work with the intuition at the beginning, and then you think like, okay, I have to professionalize and I have to put it aside. Don't put it aside too far, okay? Because it is the thing that nobody else got. It's your feeling, it's your understanding of the business. It's actually the thing that brought you to the place where you are right now. So losing that can cost you a lot, and you will end up as a mediocre standard product without the intuition and without sparking innovation in places that no one else believes is possible. My tip is to always keep your intuition as high impact factor when you, even if you do the mathematical calculation of what to do, what not to do, put the intuition on a high grade. That's it.
Great advice and a great outro for our podcast. So thank Michał for being here today, for you know, enlightening us with your journey and the things you've learned with Surfer. So now I propose get out of the office into the untouched snow and make some snow angels.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And I wish everyone really being green in the very new year so they can see only hockey sticks in their charts. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love, to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.